You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to PerpetualChessPod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We are joined by yet another long overdue guest, someone I've been a fan of for many years, and we finally got him on the pod. He is a popular streamer, a chess.com commentator, YouTube, and most of all, in my mind, an extremely ambitious player. He's a FIDE master, but despite his many responsibilities, still training hard for the IM and GM titles. He's also a blitz beast, so that probably helps these ambitions. But I'm excited to talk about all of his content projects and the OTB grind and everything else. So let's welcome the Jedi Master, the FIDE Master, James Canty, to Perpetual Chess. Welcome, James.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, Big Ben, man. I love it, man. Perpetual Chess, I've watched a lot of these, in fact, listened to a lot of these, and it's fire, man. I like seeing it. And it's I'm glad to be a part of it. I'm like, sweet, man. Absolutely. Of course, I'd love to be on the pod and listen back to it as well, because I've listened to many of these before. So pretty fired.
Thanks, man. Well, the admiration is mutual. I mean, I've mentioned this a few times over the years, but obviously I have a big list of people to reach out to and then get stuff incoming based on content projects, especially. So you've been there from the beginning. So I'm glad we can finally make this happen.
Because, right. Yeah, so much. There's so many people to make content, so many people that you can... You know, have interviews with, so it is. I'm grateful to be one of them here today on something we all listen to. Everybody know about Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Thanks, man. All right, well, let's get into it. So, what I want to start with, James, is your work ethic, because 30 years of age, correct?
30, just turned 30. Yeah, 31. Yeah, this so year, 30 in July.
30 years of age, right around the age that a chess player peaks. Yeah. Obviously, you've got a lot of responsibility. You know, work, kids. You're a fit guy, as we'll talk about. A lot going on. Streaming tons. But whereas a lot of people might either go on cruise control or stop playing OTB entirely, it seems like you grind super hard, and I'm curious what motivates you. What is your why, James?
That's a great question. Of course, Simon Sinek has a book that says Start With Why, right? So the why thing is very important. And my why, of course, is to always be great. Always, my why is my sons, but also before my sons, it was that I wanted to be and still want to be one of the best black chess players on the planet. Ever, of course, especially in my lineage of African-American chess players. There's only like a few grandmasters ever that ever played a game. Maurice Astley is the one that everybody knows, but there's others that people just never even know about, right? And that's crazy. But of course, I would love to be in that realm, and one of the best, of course, that don't stop. I also have a goal to, you know, be one of the first black 2700s, or at least there is a Basim who's from Egypt. But I'm talking about just like from U.S., Detroit, Michigan, 2700, right? Did it. That's a goal of mine, obviously. I always say shoot for the moon. If you miss, you hit the stars. I hear this a lot for motivation. motivation outside of the chess, like just motivational stuff like that. But the why is really just being a better version of myself. So something that my kids can look back on, right? And me also be, you know, one of the best black grandmasters in the world.
I mean, that's admirable, but one could say you're successful either way, right? Like you're a FIDE master, you've got a big following, good job, you know, providing a good role model. So what is it specifically about the Grandmaster title that makes you put in all those hours?
It's the fact that, you know, for me, I guess being competitive all my life, but just having that competitiveness of saying that I actually want to go to the top. The GM is the best of this game. So if you play any game, for instance, or basketball or football, the highest you can go is NBA or NFL. And then there you're superstar, MVP, or, you know, starting. I'm always in the game, or I get huge salary caps and stuff like that, because that's the highest that you can go in the game. So for chess, the highest you can go is GM. They also have super GM now, which is 2,700. So once 2,700, of course, I always say, like, you know, if you shoot for the moon, you miss the stars, right? So if I hit 2,700, then another goal would be, you know, something else, 28, right? You just want to shoot for something so that you don't get comfortable. And the problem with being comfortable is when you get comfortable, you start to decline. So never, you know, I want to be comfortable in the game, because then that's when I'm just going to be worse and people that are behind me are going to catch up. So I'm not into that.
Okay. And what's the work regimen look like these days in terms of, I mean, because again, you've got all your work stuff and then you're hitting the books on top of that. So what do you do to hit the books?
In fact, I study tons of opening theory, tons of tactics. In fact, right now it's like 70-30, 70% opening right now and 30% more tactics. But of course I do, I had that flipped before. For me, for the last year, it was a lot of 70% tactical training, calculation over everything, my brand, right? COE, I was doing a lot of calculation training, and then I would do opening afterwards. But right now I did a flip because I've done that work. I've done, my puzzle rating right now has just reached a new high yesterday, 3571 is my puzzle rating. I just did, I also do puzzle rush every day. We say clean 50 a day keeps the doctor away. So we're talking about on chess.com going to puzzle survival and hitting 50 clean, not getting any of them wrong. So if I get to 49 and I get one wrong, then I literally have to start over. Even if you got all the way to 49, it took you 20, 30 minutes, you get to 49, you get one wrong, perfect, start over. It's discipline. So I have to do it every single day. And the stream shows me, the stream sees it every day too as well. But that training, yes, I only do like 30% of tactics training now. But before then, like I got up to 2,200 over the board, barely. I think I just finally figured out what a Sicilian was, right? When I was 2,200, right? So it tells you how many openings you actually need to study getting up to those levels. So once I got, you know, there, then and most recently in the last year, I've been working a lot more on my opening prep, but it's nothing compared to, you know, the tactical and calculation training I do.
Yeah, and we should also say for listeners, James, of course, when you're at the level where he is working for the IM title with your eyes on the GM title after that, like, openings take primacy, but when you're still climbing the ladder, a little earlier in the journey, openings matter, but that you were probably doing even more tactics work, man.
Tactics work. I was running through tactics books like water. As a kid, I remember and every time they're like, hey, Canty, what should I do for this rating range? I'm like, tactics. But every time I say that, they just like, oh, okay, I do tactics every day. But they don't understand the multitude of tactics is what I'm talking about. I used to read book after book of tactics as a kid when, you know, you don't have time. I mean, you have time. Like, you just go to school, you come home, your parents pay all the bills, and, like, you just do whatever. So I was reading chess books, and I had three different tactics books. Can't remember them now, but one was a blue and white one. One was a red one. And one of them was, like, test your tactical skill, and it gave you points for each tactic. And then at the end, you could, like, tally them up to see what your rating is tactically or whatever. I think mine at the time was, like, 2,300, and I was, like, in 10th grade or something like that. But it was nice tactically. So tactics, so just doing all these tactics and tactics and tactics, it is imperative that you literally go crazy with tactics. I always tell people, look, 2 hours a day, like, if you can. Ideally, if you can't, then that's totally fine. But try to reach for 2 hours a day of tactics training, puzzle training, looking at positions that are very tactical, looking at very hard tactics. Do the small, do the easy ones, because you need those, like the layup. I always say, like in basketball, you know, the NBA players, they still warm up, even though they've done 500, 5,000 shots, 5 million shots, however many shots it takes to get to the NBA. You know, they still go and they do layups and they warm up line. Like, they never did a layup in their life, but they still do it, right? So it's the same thing with the tactics. Like, you have to hit these boys hard every day. hours a day. And then at some point, okay, you can switch up, you can add and expand to your repertoire, meaning openings and stuff like that. But look, I can play H3, move one, and win majority of the games from somebody lower rated because I'm going to beat you somewhere tactically or something like that. I used to win mini games this way. I remember growing up through the ranks where it's just games that I know I shouldn't have won that game. But tactically, I did because they blundered somewhere because they're not working on that aspect of the game.
All right. Well, good advice there. But I mean, I think a lot of people just feel like they, you know, what you say makes sense, but they just don't have 2 hours. But I could also see someone like from the outside looking in saying you don't have 2 hours. Now, you do sometimes stream your study, so I'm sure that helps. We'll get to that. Right. But for starters, James, why don't you just take us through like a typical day when you're not traveling, you're at home on the grind. Take us through sunrise to sunset.
So it depends on the day and what's going on. But a typical day, like I'll get up. Usually, if I'm not taking my son to school, like sometimes their mom has them. So I get my sons every other weekend, stuff like that. So if I have my sons, then I'll take them to school. I'll take one to school and then I'll be up already 7-8 in the morning. So I'll take an hour or two to study. Usually I like to do that. So it's an hour or two there. Then I'll do some chess work during the day, like commentary or videos or some lessons or anything like from a sponsor. I work with them. Finish that, and then I have usually a 2-3 hour block, so I'll study then. And then after that, I'm relaxing, get my son from school, do some other stuff, and then I'll stream at night, but I'm also studying while I'm streaming. So, like, I'm doing puzzles, right? I'm also looking at games that was played today, and I'm playing games as well. So in a day, I clock. And then after the stream, which ends at, like, 1, 2 in the morning, I'm not really sleep yet. I'll take another hour before I go to bed to sleep, to study a little bit more. So I clock sometimes 5 to 6 hours a day, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, but always up to 5 hours a day of study.
Amazing. And what's your Twitch community like? Like, do you get people coming on like, come on, Canty, we don't want to watch you study. We want to watch you do other
stuff. Some people I do get it, but these are all new people. All new people that come in, and I'm like, oh, he's brand new. Welcome to the stream. And I have a today command to let people know this is what we do. This is a improving stream. This is not a stream. This is entertainment, but entertainment is usually at night. And even at night, we still have improving because I have to do the clean 50 before we do anything else. The stream could go 3 hours. If I didn't do 50, we're going to stay here till I get 50. But that's the discipline. So usually I get it now within yesterday was a record, 15 minutes. Got in there. 15 minutes later, the 50 was done. So definitely just flying through them. But some days it's tough. Some days I'm a little fatigued from studying all day. So I'm like, oh, I'm getting them wrong. And then 40 minutes later, I'm still trying to break 50, right? So, but it's fun, bro. It's really amazing. When the people come in and they're new and they say, hey, can you play some chess? I'm like, hey, man, look, this is why we're improving, because we're studying right now and then we're going to go play chess. So I need you to do the same thing. So they understand, oh, this is an improving. This is where I'm going to learn. I'm going to improve. And we're also going to play chess all at the same time.
And, you know, any content creator is going to have to deal with sort of questions about balancing, say, commercial interest and self-advancement. Now, it's obviously good for your chess, what you've done. I think you've got, like, over 30,000 Twitch followers? How many? Actually,
yeah, I'm at 35 right now, and that was, like, literally not about a week ago. It's, like, maybe 5 days. We've been at 35,000, but we're at 35.8, so it's blowing. It's spiraling now because great. I'm streaming twice a day. I usually stream. I usually do one a day. But with the acquisition of Chessable and Play Magus Group, I can now stream some Chessable streams. Because, you know,
hold there's on, we're going to come back to that in a minute. I got Because I got to finish my question, which is right. Obviously you're crushing it. You're doing quite well. And as you say, seem to be gaining momentum. But right. Do you ever wonder, like, if I was just playing bullet chess or, like, whatever, you know, watching Hikaru play, whatever the masses want on Twitch, I might have even more viewers. Like, does that sort of thought cross your mind?
Absolutely, of course. I'm always, I like the fact that I'm blended in everywhere. So everywhere that I go, any stream that I go to, there are people that are like, oh, that's Canty, like, or who are you? Or, like, people know of me, or they don't know, but they really like me. So it's really cool. I remember it used to be, you know, like, who are you kind of thing, but everybody really kind of knows me now, so it's really easier to go and get follows from people or just hang out anywhere and be interactive. It's real cool. It's real easy. I like the people come into the stream and find me a lot more. Or like, hey, I seen your stream from Hikaru. I caught you from YouTube. I get that a lot now coming to when people come to the stream. Or I found you from a YouTube video. Or I saw you in Hikaru's channel. I saw you in commentary somewhere. These are the main things now for new viewers is them seeing me somewhere. I have a bot on chess.com, and I'm also big with Chess Kid. Yeah, I have a bot on chesskid.com. So I'm big. I'm a Chess Kid coach as well. I coach a lot of kids. I think that, and I believe that training with kids is the future for people, that for adults that want to improve. You can also improve with children by teaching children, not maybe not the basics, but like more advanced children. Like I train some kids, just like 1600, right? A kid, 1600, and training them, and we're talking about triangulation, right? So, right. But it's very nice, and I'm learning stuff actually as I'm going with these kids. So I'm a Chess Kid coach as well, so they find me from that. So really just being everything. I was blessed enough back in 2018 to just be full-time chess, and now I'm all doing that. And I know for me to make GM, the only way that I'm going to be able to do this is I need to study all day, every day. I have to be around chess because I could do it without it, but it's much harder because I have to go to a job where, I have to stay away from chess for set many hours, and I have my mind on chess for say 8 hours while I'm at work, wherever my day job may be. Right. So I had to make chess the full-time thing. And now that I'm able to do that, I have more time to play chess and hit the goal.
So that it sounds like that kind of factors into your calculus, because like, okay, maybe if you played Blitz, like you might have more subs on Twitch. I don't know, but that's just a portion of your income anyway. And right, you're kind of looking long term, big picture, that if you have a grand, if you can achieve your dream, become a grandmaster, obviously downstream, that's going to have even more growth.
Absolutely. Well, of course. It's going to be magazine type growth because of put you on the front of the magazine, because like there's no other. The last black GM was Maurice Ashley. Actually, sorry. No, that was, I think, Amos Simote or Kenny Solomon. I think it was Kenny. But it was, you don't even hear about these guys, right? So it's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge. People see it. People know that I'm doing it. I'm improving. I had my best tournament ever in the last tournament I just played. I played 4 Grandmasters, and I always put it in perspective to let people know. Over the board chess, I played 4 GMs. 3 of them was back-to-back. And imagine that you play 4 GMs and you only lose to one of them, right? You only lost to one in the classical time control, the hardest setting that you have against the toughest competition. And you played 4 of them and you only lost to one. Something's clicking, it's working. And from there, I think that was my last tournament in Charlotte at the U.S. Masters. It was the biggest confidence boost that I needed going into 2023, letting me know, oh, yeah, I can really do this. I already knew that I could. But of course, when you start seeing results, and results come from work. So me just constantly working, consistency, discipline, working and leveling up. That's my resolutions for the year, obviously. But at the same time, it's working. I'm seeing it. I'm getting the fruits of the labor by actually, playing and studying and believing in what I'm believing. I'm preaching it to everybody else as I stream, and I'm showing it in the results, especially in my last tournament.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to get the full breakdown of what you have planned in terms of tournaments, but I didn't mean to, well, I sort of meant to, but when I cut you off, I meant to return to the topic of,
yeah, of
you streaming your Chessable courses, which of course, with the chess.com Chessable merger, I know Jess, shout out to Jesse Cry. He's excited. He's been doing it on the DL. Now he can finally come out in the open and stream his Chessable, and the same for you. So what is your Chessable regimen? Anything in particular you're working on right now?
What's funny is I see people like just come to my stream, because what I have, when I like to show that when I scroll, I have 4 years. Like if I go to my Chessable right now, it says I have. So first off, there's a streak. So if you're on every day, you get a streak. So my streak, and I always ask people, I'm like in the chat, hey, what's your streak? I just want to see what's your highest streak. And some people say, oh, I'm like 350 days. I'm like, that's nice. No, 500. Somebody say, I was like, that's awesome. Here's mine. Mine is 1,162 days in a row.
Wow.
That's like 3.5 years. Somebody told me it was like 3.5 years, something like that. So I'm like, oh, cool. That's a lot of days. I didn't care, because I'm like, I'm doing this every day. It's discipline. It's work. It's another day in the office to me. But Chessable books wise, I scroll every time I tell people, what books you have? Or like, are you afraid somebody's going to prep for you? And I just scroll. And I scroll for like literally about a minute or two. I'm scrolling to show all the books that I have in Chessable. That I'm like, yeah, if you're going to prep, you're going to have to do a lot of prep, because there is a lot of stuff I have in here. And you don't know what day. Some days I'm studying this. Some days I'm studying that. I looked at a game. I got inspired. I want to play this. Let's that. And I like the universality. My screensaver right now is about a quote from Fabiano talking about most players are universal. Well, most of the best players are universal, but what separates them is their calculation. And I really was hyped, because calculation over everything, right? So, but it was it's huge that I do so much Chessable work. I did a lot of tactics work in the last year. Now I'm doing more opening work. But in the last year, I did, a tactics book that I used in there that said you have to be about 2,200 feet before you open the book. And it is a very hard book. The tactics are sometimes 15 moves long. I mean, I'm not even kidding. Maybe not 15, but like close to more than 10. Like, I'm like, bro, this is ridiculous. This is a tactic? And I was like, I understand why it's 2,200 feet plus. But I remember going through it a year ago in December and December of 2022 when I got my, sorry, December 2021, when I got my, when I got my coach, my mentality, psychology, positional Russian coach. I was working with him and he was like, yo, every time I would move or ask him a question about a position, he would tell me to calculate. And this is kind of where calculation of over everything came from. Every time I would ask him, hey, this, you know, what about this question? What about this? What about this? Deep questions. Cool. That sounds great. Calculate it. And I'm like, wow. So there's something about this calculation thing that I didn't really pay much attention to. So I started calculating more. I started working on it. January of 2022, go to New York and I beat my first GM. After working with this coach and working with calculation and working with tactics in a deeper way than I've ever done before. I've done tons of tactics, thousands of tactics getting to where I am. But that was just a huge turning point for me, a breaking point where like, you know, look, calculation is important, very important. It's really over everything. I need to train my mentality as well. And now now after going through all of that, I do the opening books mostly now just to stay, you know, I like to get advantages, small little advantages here and there because my tactics, I rely on that. My positional game is good too as well. So I worked on a lot of everything. But right now, Inchessable is really the opening work.
Okay. And do you remember the name of the calculation case course you were referring to?
In fact, those are a few. I have a Grandmaster Preparation, all of those by Jacob Agar. Those are all good. The only ones that are on Chessable are positional and calculation. The ones that you want to get offline are thinking outside the box, attack and defense, and in-game play. I read all of these from Jacob Agar. Those are the ones that you can get probably on Forward Chess if you want to do, or I got the hard copies literally looking at them right now, but got the hard copies as well in there. So those are really good. There's also one Encyclopedia Combinations. Like, this is a secret book, but this one also, that's a 2,200 feet A book. They, like, you have to open it. And I mean, it's cool to have, but it also is the hardest book you ever gonna go through. And if you aren't ready, just don't open it. Like, just don't, because you will get discouraged reading that book. I was looking at some stuff. There's like basic, advanced, intermediate, and advanced. And in basic, I was like, bro, this is basic? I was like, bro, I don't even want to know what advanced look like. But now that this was, you know, a year ago, and now looking back at it, I only do the advanced ones now. But I was like, I was strong then, and I was doing the basics. And now looking at the advanced ones, they're much easier because I've been exposing myself to that type of level of tactic, that hard stuff that, like, would come second nature to Magnus or a 2700. They're like, oh, that's this, because they already put in the reps there, and that's where I'm at.
Okay, and at a slightly lower level, although not still reasonably challenging, I've heard you recommend forcing chess moves on chess.
Oh, as man, well. Forcing chess moves is amazing. Forcing chess moves is probably one of the biggest chess books, or one of the best ones that got me thinking more of like, as a matter of fact, I'll give you a quick story. Forcing chess moves, that's like maintenance. Somebody downstairs doing some work.
Okay, sorry for the noise, listeners.
No, it's all good. Yeah. So forcing chess moves, quick story. I remember I won $20,000 in 2015. Yeah, 2015 at the first Millionaire Chess. And I remember the three books I read were Chess Openings for White and Black Explained, those two, and Forcing Chess, which is why if people know my repertoire, Hyper Accelerated Dragon, I love playing that. Now, of course, I am well-versed now in many different Sicilians because I've expanded my repertoire, but Hyper Accelerated Dragon for Black, I would play Bogo and Nimzo Indian against D4, because that's everything that they gave me in that book. I go through and I've done it. I still use some of the lines today. This book, that book, both of those books said, the Chess Openings for White and Black Explained, it said, you can use these books for a lifetime. And I was like, wow. And he was like, you can even face a grandmasters with this. And I'm like, oh, cool, really? And it really got me. And he's right. I drew one of the first grandmasters over the board in the Accelerated Dragon, the Knight G4 line after they take Queen takes D4. And I drew Kadri Dennis, and actually a very strong grandmaster. So I remember drawing him with that stuff from there. But I also went through the Forcing Chess Moves book. And that one, a reason why I like it is because they have stuff in there that I can even recall. I always tell people, look, if you never read a book, if you don't know what was in chapter 6. So if I ask you, what's in chapter 6? And you're like, I don't know. Well, you didn't really read the book. Maybe you read some of it. You got some of it from. But this is why repetition is very important. I read Forcing Chess Moves probably seven times. 7-8 times. So I can tell you that EST is equal or stronger threat. The bread, these also are the ones that are, what does it say? These are the ones that people miss the most, is what he says in the book. These are the tactics that people miss the most. The reason why I like it is because not only is he telling you this is how computers think, he's teaching you to use your computer eyes, quotation marks. So, right. So with the computer eyes, he says in there is that it's very important to, you know, train your eyes to look like, to think like a computer. How do you do that? They do brute force calculation. Forcing moves first. So this is what you should check. Look for the most forcing moves first, even if it looks absolutely ridiculous. Some of my craziest games, wicked, disgusting sacrifices, are like, I just had a game, I beat a 2380 strong IM, very strong, wicked attack. And my, it was like an immortal game. I had a queen and a rook hanging, but it was mate. Like, he's getting mated, or he has to give up his queen. And it was an amazing game there because of the tactics there. So forcing chess moves to help you do that. It is a hard book. I do tell people, look, you know, I used to tell students this when I'm telling them to get that book. I would say, hey, if you get, you know, you're in chapter, for the first chapter, I think, is brute force combinations. If you go through the first chapter, brute force combinations, and you go in there and you tell you, and you get, you know, I think on Chessable, there's 95 variations in the first one. So if you get 94 out of 95 wrong, don't be discouraged, because this book is that hard, right? So that's what I want people to understand. Forcing chess moves is not one of them books that you read one time and you will get better. But I mean, I read it so many times. The third time I went through it, I remembered that it takes three or more pieces for a successful attack. I didn't even know this until I just went through the book again. And I'm like, you know, when you go through a book a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth time, you get more from it than you have before. Something else sticks out. So that time I was like, wow, like, I'm noticing a pattern with all of these puzzles. There's always like three or four pieces in there. So now, in like not even really thinking as much, or sometimes not even calculating as much, which you should be, but sometimes you don't have to calculate as much if you notice there's three pieces over here. There's like five pieces in this area. There's got to be something, right? Spend your time, calculate. It may actually be something there. Reverse the move order. You got to figure it out. It may be something there. Start with the forcing moves first, but that's what opens up your brain to start looking for the moves that you can't really spot in your own games.
Good stuff. And for listeners, I didn't prep him that I was going to ask him about forcing moves. You can see he basically has the book memorized.
Yeah, I do, man. I do. And there's a 2022 version. There's two of them, of course. So I want people to get the right one. The first version is the one with the guy flexing with the white arm. That's the first one. Then you got the newer one that just dropped that has Pontus Carlson in the preface. And there's a new chapter, Charleston's, what is it? Charles Hertan's Hierarchy, which is a brand new one. It's a brand new chapter that wasn't in there before. But, you know, I've deeply studied that book. And then I think, you know, I recommend forcing chess moves first. Then when you finish it and you read it twice, you graduate from that book. And then you go to combinations, the Encyclopedia of Combinations, because that one is next level. That's the only book I use for tactics now, because it's so hard. I mean, right now for review, it says I got over 10,000 moves to review in that course. It's so hard, but it also, when you train hard like that, you know, and it's like facing a computer every game, you losing every game. But then when you go face a human, you're like, why am I beating everybody? Because you was playing the hardest competition. You've just been at your peak there. You're fighting for your life every game, and you're playing somebody that's very, very strong, that knows everything. Now you're playing somebody that's gonna make many mistakes. You're on it, like, you're sharp, you're very sharp.
Yeah, and I would say for forcing chess moves, maybe 1,800, 1,900 minimum. What do you think the minimum rating before someone can tackle that is, James?
That's a good question. In fact, I say tactic rating. If you have a tactics rating 2K and above, you're ready. If you have a tactics rating, because, I mean, not like a, you know, sometimes I have some students that are 2K tactics rating, but like 1,200 online. And I'm like, that's fine. That's cool. Maybe 1,200 USCF, but at least you're tactically already thinking, right, you're at 2K tactics. You're an expert, that is, in tactics. Right, and by USCF standards. So definitely time to upgrade there. Now, of course, if you find it too hard, then you do need to slow it down and go to other tactics books, Woodpecker Method, other stuff like that. Like, go somewhere else, and then when you're ready, then you jump into forcing chess moves.
Okay, yeah. And Woodpecker Method is definitely slightly, you know, still intermediate level, intermediate to advanced, but definitely starts out easier than forcing chess moves. And of course, lower down, there's stuff like tactics times. There's just straight up checkmate courses. I've recommended the Benedictine visualized courses before. Mm-hmm. So lots to choose from. And if you have questions, you can always hit me up somewhere, and we'll get you a proper recommendation for your level. James, I'm going to attempt to extract some information from you about your upcoming Chessable courses, but first we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. Perpetual Chess is proud, as always, to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, is known for their Move Trainer technology, which utilizes spaced repetition to help you remember tactical patterns and opening sequences. They have a huge library of courses for whatever aspect of your game you want to work on. Some of their new courses include a course on the Tirage Defense to D4, which is a good choice if you're looking for a dynamic opening against 1D4. It's by Super Grandmaster Jordan von Forrest. Speaking of Super Grandmasters, former world champion and legendary trainer Rustam Kazymjanov has a course out on the C3 Sicilian. If you're newer to chess, be sure to check out friend of the pod, I am Andras Toth's 1D4 for beginners. And of course, they've got tactics courses too. They have stuff you can check out for free. So if you have not already, make sure you go to chessable.com and keep an eye on their ever-growing supply of quality chess courses.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And as I just mentioned moments ago, James teased on his Twitch stream, and it was clipped on his YouTube channel, that he's got not one, not two, but three Chessable courses in the offing. A lot of the chess.com affiliated people now with the merger are going to be able to create content on Chessable, which is super exciting. So James, you know I got to ask, are you going to reveal what these courses are?
Of course, one of them I can reveal, the other two I cannot. But one I can reveal, we've already been talking about it, it's already in the works. We're working on a video and stuff now. We already have even the PGNs and stuff ready. So it's a joint course with one of my students, in fact, actually, who he just loves it. He loves it, but he reached out and he was like, yo, we should do a course together. I'm like, perfect. That'd be sweet. Yeah, perfect. But it's actually a Scotch Gambit. So
okay. That was one of my guesses. I have one other guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very, very well versed in the Scotch Gambit. Actually, I've never lost a game over the board with Scotch Gambit. Even recently, I had a game where in my best tournament of my life was the last one. I played a very strong IM. She's like 2380 something. Very strong. She had a good tournament. I had white. We played a Scotch Gambit. I was slightly better, and I could have pushed in an opposite color bishop in game. We're like, I mean, I'm definitely slightly better. And I can push for more, but I'm like, you know what? Look, I'm going to just take this draw here. I'm going to get 5 points for this just for a free point, like free 5 points. Yeah, I'll take it, right? That's a business decision there because she didn't make any mistakes, really. I didn't have any chances for an attack. I can use this energy for another game with black. I'll just do that, right? So it was a draw there. I drew her, but I beat two masters over the board with it as well. I got another draw, right? So, you know, it's very nice. I'm very strong with the Scotch Gambit. I've also had some of my best games. I think one of the first times I beat a GM online was with the Scotch Gambit. It was actually Samil Mirandi back in the day. I remember this had to be like first times. I mean, this was like maybe 2.5 years ago, something like that. But some of the first times or first ages of me streaming, I still play Scotch Gambit. Today, I just love it because I hate playing Roy. I mean, I can play a Roy. I started with Roy before Scotch Gambit. So I know Roy very well versed. I know the A4 lines. I know the back and forth. I know the Briar variation with the black. I know so many variations. I know the Knight A5, C5. I think this is a Shugoran variation for black. For white, we play C3. You play Bishop C2. You play D4. Like, I've played so many Roy Lopez lines courtesy of Magnus. Keep it simple. Or not keep it simple. It was Play Like Magnus. It was a book back in the day. Play Like Magnus, Roy Lopez version. So this was like early 2000s, I think. And I remember playing the Roy. But Scotch Gambit, once I got that, 2015 is when I picked it up. And I got those two books, Chess Opening for White and Black Explained. And I'm like, wow, this Scotch Gambit is fun. And it was aggressive. And I got stuff and I got positions that fit in my style, which is more aggressive, more fun, more tactics, right? So I was like, wow, this is great. And the Scotch Gambit has served me very well. I still use it all the time online. If I play E4 and you go E5, you're most likely going to get a Scotch Gambit. Now, of course, I am looking around. And, I like to stay universal is what... Again, Fabi, the word is universal here. So I have looked at many different openings right now, and I do have a few. Like, I like Vienna, and I like Roy, and I like Scotch Gambit. Of course, Roy is like, you know, classic, top level. You know, if you plan another GM, you might want to go Roy, right? But Vienna is also a good switch as well. Certain Viennas are nice. I saw some games with Faruja, some very strong players playing the Vienna, even Hikaru as well. So certain types of Viennas are nice too. But that Scotch Gambit holds a very special place in my heart. So I do have a course coming out with Scotch Gambit, two other opening courses as well. But definitely Scotch Gambit is the first one to drop, most likely.
Okay. Sounds good, man. You know, anything to get us away from the Italians and the Roys.
I didn't even mention Italians. So I forgot. Right. But yeah, of course. Yeah.
And let me ask, so obviously Scotch Gambit, dynamic opening, often giving up a pawn. So the computer is not necessarily going to like it as much. Does that bother you at all, or is it you just more on the psychological side of the spectrum? I think I know the answer since you play it, but I gotta ask.
Yeah, I'm always on the psychological part because of in many openings today. Like if you look at classic example, Joe Bava London, which is one of my favorite openings. King's Indian, love those. Right, certain Grunfeld, certain positions where it says that white is plus one, and even if you look at your own games or even classical games of GMs, and you look at them, and sometimes you'll check in with the engine and you'll see at some point one of them was plus two, but couldn't convert it. Or one of them was plus one, 1.5. And like, as you know, as a lot of people see the engine and like, oh, he's losing plus 1.5, the game's over. But if you take the engine away from them and you're like, I don't really know what's going on. Is it really plus 1.5? It may be plus 1.5. And if it is, then you have to find this only specific line that gives a very small edge because of a square on B6 that you didn't even really care about that much because you're thinking about other things. So the psych part, I always remember that, yeah, the engine says this, but I'm always playing a human, right? And the human is going to do something different than what the engine says. My first GM win over the board, the piece sack that I did wasn't the greatest. It was like, white's probably slightly better. But I ended up winning the game, even though he was slightly better as a GM. Number one, probably didn't expect the sacrifice. Number two, you know, grandmasters or strong players don't like to be attacked. And so when I'm attacking him, like, he didn't like that. The psych part's kicking in a little bit too as well. And he made some mistakes, and I was able to win the game. So every time I see the engine thing there, I only take it with a grain of salt to understand that. Yeah, okay, that says that, but you have to prove this 100% accurately through the entirety of the game.
Wow. Impressive stuff. Look forward to the course. Do you know when it's coming out?
No, we don't. I just got an email actually yesterday from Chessable talking about updates, but nothing yet, of course, because they have to do the beta testing and then we got to do this and that. So, you know, it's whenever.
But, okay. Well, yeah. Something to look forward to. And speaking of looking forward to, James, I mean, you were discussing your breakout success in your most recent tournament. But I checked your USCF profile. You took Christmas off. What's next? When's your next tournament?
Yeah, I did. I took Christmas off to relax and study. My coach says you shouldn't play like every single month. He's like, you're right. You need breaks to recharge. In fact, he told me the Russian school of chess, in a way, is like you study sets of openings for a period of months. So like you'll take a Karo Khan, and like if you're playing Black Karo Khan, Semislav, and like D4. And this is your repertoire. Study for 4 or 5 months, go to a tournament, or 3 or 4 months, but you go to a tournament. Then you play the tournament, and then you reassess, and then you do it again. Now, I can play every month, but you're always in training mode. You're in serious training mode. I'm always in serious training mode, but it's when you're closer to a tournament, it's a little bit more serious because you know it's coming up, and you're like cramming more and like more emotions. Sometimes people get a little nervous there, so you have to work your nerves and understand your nerves. So I have January, I have Charlotte this month, so I'm playing, I think it's the Charlotte Open,
mm-hmm.
but MLK weekend, Eric Rose is going to be there, so I'm playing, and they invited me out because there's some strong players, there's some GMs and some IMs there, I think it's FIDE rated as well, so there's no norm here, but cool, I'll go there and just play for some FIDE rating, get some FIDE, and then play some strong chess and prep for my February one, which I don't have yet. I just like, you know, kind of look to see what's available. If there's nothing cool or nothing that I want to play in, then I'll wait. I'm fine with waiting now because now I'm at a place where I'm like, oh yeah, I can definitely play with these boys now, especially after that last tournament. I played like 4 GMs and 5 IMs, right? 1-1 and drew a lot of games. But I was like, okay, cool. I can like fight with these dogs for real. I mean, you're expected to lose all of them games. But I won one and drew all of them, the rest of them. And I lost another one. But drew a lot of games against stronger players here. I mean, I gained 60 points through 2 tournaments, which is the Chicago one and then the Charlotte one. So maybe it was about 65 points. One was 20, one was like 40, something like that. But it was pretty good. I got a pretty nice gain in points from that. So I have Charlotte this month. February is nothing yet. There's something coming up in March for Charlotte again. I love going to Charlotte. Charlotte's one of my favorites, Charlotte Chess Center. Chicago, New York's another one. I have already in August, I have Portugal. So they invited me back out. Yeah, they're like, hey, come out here. Please come out to Portugal. So I'm like, cool, I'll be there. Sorry to put this time aside in August there. But yeah, I'm leveling up. Like I said, my resolution is discipline, continuously working hard constantly, and then and leveling up. So that's it.
And how do you balance, like, just overall trying to get better with the titles themselves, the norms themselves? Like, what's, like you mentioned, there's no norm possibility in Charlotte. How big a priority is the actual norm at this moment for you?
Oh, it's absolutely. In fact, only reason why I'm going to this tournament is because I was invited by Charlotte. They're like, hey, come out to this tournament. Perfect. I'm like, perfect. I'll do that. Because usually I'm not coming out unless it's FIDE. For me, right, the reason why I have such a late start in a way and a later improver, I guess being from Detroit, Michigan, right, I didn't know about FIDE. I used to call it FIDE up until 2015, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Think about that, right? That's like recent. You know, so I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and they don't tell us none of this. Like, Feingold used to live here, but he was the only IM, and then he went overseas to get the GM, right? So he wasn't really in Detroit as much, right? But it was the fact that, you know, being in inner city Detroit public schools and the small black communities like this, like, we was never told about what the route is to get to GM. It is not USCF. In fact, I was like, why is there a USC? Why is it not FIDE? I was kind of pissed when I figured out this is the route. I never knew about this. I was 2350, my first FIDE rating, something like that. And I'm like, okay, that's cool, but like, I don't really care about FIDE. When in fact, I should. I used to call it FIDE. I'm like, okay, what is FIDE? Don't nobody even care about FIDE. Like, USCF is the way to do it. But in fact, I was completely wrong because nobody teaches you that kind of thing. So now that I know this, only thing I'm trying to play is FIDE. That's it. I don't try to play anything else but FIDE tournaments, because the USCF, I played all of that growing up. Every week I was in a Scholastic tournament in USCF. Every week I was playing another tournament, then we go to Nationals. But everything was USCF. So I'm like, bro, why was we not playing FIDE? I could have been so much further. So now I always do FIDE tournaments. And when I give back, one of my goals is to give back to the inner city communities, and especially smaller black communities too, that don't know. They like chess, want to play. What's the route here? You need to go FIDE. You need to go all FIDE all the time. Work on your FIDE rating so that, you know, you do have shots and give yourself chances, so when you get older, it's easier. But yeah, FIDE is all I'm playing now. So that is FIDE rated in Charlotte. They invited me. It's the only reason really why I'm going out. It's not a norm, but I love a norm tournament, but you also need rating too. You need rating and norms. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll look at this as the rating one, because I'm not getting a norm. Let's say I go 6 out of 6. I would not get a norm. If I be 6 GMs in this tournament, still won't get a norm, right? So but I would get a lot of ratings. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'll go rating. You know, rating's fine with me. That's fine. And then I can prep and I can test some new stuff. I can test this. I can play some good chess, hang out with the people in Charlotte, just have a good time while I'm playing some chess, and then get ready for the next tournament.
Nice. And James, for context, I mean, I could ballpark guess all of these, but what's your FIDE rating, your US chess rating, and your Blitz rating? Again, Blitz rating, obviously, especially moves all over the place, but roughly.
Yeah, mine, actually, I don't have a rapid or a blitz FIDE. I only have a classical FIDE, which is 2201 now, something like that. So it's provisional 2350. And then it went down to after I played Hans when he was a kid. But actually, I played, it was, my first rating was 2353 provisionally. And I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. Then it stuck for a while. So I was able to claim the FM title back in like, this year or whenever, like very recently, I was able to. It was like, yeah, you can actually claim it. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that. Okay, cool, I'll claim it. So, because I've hit it before, 2350. And then I played a tournament where I had, how many players was there? I played, it was 10 of us. It was a round robin. I got 4.5 out of 9 against all these guys, which is IMs, right? IM, FM, IM, everybody's strong. Everybody's good to be in the section. And I dropped 100 points. And I was like, what is up with FIDE? Like, how do you drop 100 points from facing these guys? And I was really kind of like, yo, this is ridiculous. I don't understand. I mean, I could see dropping 30, 40 points. But 100 points after, like, I beat a IM. I beat the strongest guy in our section, which was Martin Del Campo at the time. He was like 2380, something crazy like that. And then everybody else was like at least 2200, 2300. I didn't understand how I dropped 100 points from doing 50%. Even if you under 50, you shouldn't drop 100, but I guess the K factor and all this other weird FIDE stuff that you don't really know. So I dropped there, dropped some rating, trying to figure things out there. Took a little break as well, but now we're on a come up. So I'm at 2201. I was at 2158, so I gained 60-some points, something like that, close to 60 points from these last two tournaments. So I'm at 2201 now.
Or okay, seven, and online like blitz, that. You're often like
online blitz, I'm over 2600. 26, yeah. My lead chest is over 27. My bullet has been up to 2774 highs. I just reached a new high puzzle where I was 3571, trying to touch 36 today.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and honestly, you know, James, I'm always preaching like moderate goals to the listeners of the pod in particular, because, you know, there's so many sort of, say, 1200 to 1400 players who are like, you know, I'd like to be a grandmaster, and you know, it could happen, but I'm always just saying, like, one step at a time. But right. I do think, like, you're probably IM strength already, so that helps. But still, the air gets thin, as John Donaldson once said on the pod. Like, the higher up you go, the more challenging it is. So it's good that you've got the work ethic you do.
Thanks, bro. Thanks. Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is the compound effect. I always tell people this: the work that you put in right now, sometimes you don't see it until 2 months from now. The stuff that you did right now, the stuff that you did this week, you won't have to use until 6 months from now, when it really is going to compound effect. Like I tell people, the work that I'm putting in every day hits at one point. I give it examples like, you know, LeBron James or Steph Curry from basketball, right? And these guys just woke up one day after all that work they was putting in, and one day they just became who they were now. Like, oh, we know Steph for shooting these threes from long range. But it's the compound effect of him doing that every day, half-court shots, the pre-warm-ups, all this stuff he does. Now he can do it in real time, and we're just now seeing it because he was doing it behind the scenes. My last tournament is a perfect example. Compound effect, working hard, consistently working, getting up early, making time, there's a difference from having time and making time. So I make time all the time to study chess. I don't go out, I don't do anything, I don't watch movies, I don't have a TV. I only study chess because that's just all what I do. That's the goal. So I make the time there, and the compound effect hits me harder because I only focus on chess. I'm studying and studying. So I go to the next tournament and I crush it. And the last tournament was a perfect example. 4 GMs, only lost to one. It's the compound effect. So I'm gonna keep moving and keep working and keep doing the same thing and being consistent and disciplined, and you know, compound effect is going to hit every time. Also, it boosts your confidence. Confidence comes from preparation. And how do you prepare? Working and preparing very hard. What you do in practice, you're going to do in your real game. So very confident from preparing, and you know, the sky's the limit.
And do you ever get burnout from chess?
The only time I get burnt out is like I've studied too much that day. That's it. Really, because there's a song. Yeah, next day I'm ready to go. I'm recharged. I'm ready to go, and I feel good. And I think it's because you have to love it. And if you don't love it, like, it just, you will probably have a real burnout where you are like, yo, I don't want to play. And it can happen. You can burn out on anything. In fact, I remember you just have inspiration, I think, will help you with burnout. People that are already doing the same thing that you're doing, or goals, or people that you look up to. And what are they doing? Like, I remember when I couldn't imagine doing it now, but this was like probably pandemic time. I took a month or two off of streaming, and I can't believe I did that. Thinking back now, I'm like, wow, I could never do that now because of where I am. Also, Hikaru being one of my biggest inspirations when it comes to streaming and discipline because of how he works. On Tuesdays, which was, 2 days ago, he streams 8 hours and plays both Title Tuesdays and wins them, right? Most times playing high level competition and interacting with the chat, talking 8 hours, sitting, right? There's discipline. He also said, I remember one thing, this is probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I'm real close with him. I'm also on Team Hikaru, which consists of content with him and commentary. So, you know, if you saw some of the Toronto videos, I was out there hanging out with Hikaru. Like, that's one of my buddies, like, for real. But he said, you're not a real streamer if you don't show up every day. And I never forgot that. So I started to show up every day because he was. I really looked up to him. I've known him for a long time. He came to Detroit, did some simuls here before, like long time ago. He did content here in August of like 2021. He came down in August and he did some content in Detroit playing XC. I'm on those videos too. If you go to YouTube and see those on his YouTube. I was also fatter than too, so fitness is important, right? So you can tell from the, like, man, can't he slim down? But it helps your chest, right? But Hikaru is my guy. So hearing that, his discipline and stuff like that, I applied it. So burnout, you can't have burnout, but a lot of times burnout can be, you know, fixed by inspiration or somebody that you can look up to, and you see them, you go chill with their stream, or, you know, they inspire you back again, and you don't have that burnout. So constant having that for me, I mean, I just have never been burnt out. I can't remember the last time I've been burnt out.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we've actually got a related question related to what you mentioned with fitness, James, from a Patreon supporter of the pod. But first, we're going to take one more break and we'll be right back. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. Aimchess has an algorithm that gathers your games from the major sites like chess.com and Lee Chess and gives you actionable intel based on the patterns it detects. It can be how you do with certain openings, what aspects of the game you excel at versus need work at. And guess what? Aim Chess has a new feature that you should check out right now, just in time for the new year. You can check out your year in review for 2022. You just enter your username and it gives you how many hours you spent chess, how many games you played, how you did with various openings, lots of fun facts that the algorithm is able to gather. So be sure to check out aimchess.com. If you decide to try out subscribing, use the code perpetual30 to save 30%. You can also use the link in the show description to try out aimchess.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And as we alluded to, we have a question from Igor Feinstein, Patreon supporter of the pod. Those who support Perpetual Chess can find out the guests and submit questions for them. And this one, Igor asks, he says, what I find most inspiring about you is that other than being a FIDE master and working hard on becoming IM or GM, you obviously also do some serious weightlifting. How often do you work out? And did you begin at a relatively early age? And he also asked, do you think that the African-American community places a greater emphasis on weightlifting than the general populace? Because he notices Maurice Ashley is pretty fit as well.
Maurice Ashley fit too, right. Well, I'll answer that one first. In fact, I mean, more it's just like in the African-American community, sports is like huge, like football and basketball. I mean, like most teams you see that are like predominantly black anyway, right? So it's like a lot of that. You'll see that. So, I mean, but that doesn't mean they necessarily lift weights. But yeah, I think it's you see it more in the black communities because it's just of the football, basketball thing. But in chess, it is different. Like, nobody's, like, lifting weights and playing chess. Now, there are a lot. In fact, mind and body is very important. Bobby Fischer says that as your mind deteriorates, so does the body, right? And it's very important to, like, work on your body. He was big on that. You know, you got pictures seeing him underwater, like, holding his breath, right? And it was cool. But I even looked up, you know, fitness and chess and found some very interesting things. Anand likes to do hiking. Kramnik likes to actually swim and solve complex puzzles. And I always make a joke like, bro, you know, how do you breathe? Like, I'm just trying to breathe. He's thinking about right. Solving a puzzle and he doing a freestyle, you know, freestyle stroke and like, or breaststroke, trying to swim. And he's solving a complex puzzle. I'm like, bro, I'm trying to breathe. Right. So it's very cool to me to see that. I mean, even Mark Esterman does tennis, very heavy. I see Dubov can do one arm pull-ups. Now it's harder is more if you have more muscle to do one arm pull-ups, but I saw him doing one arm pull-ups. He did some crazy stuff on a bar there. Lots of players work out. Hikaru likes to hike. He's been hitting the gym a little bit better more as well. I know Jan got in shape for the world championship. So people understand that the fitness part is important. But and the diet, not only that, 80% is nutrition. It's very important because I remember seeing Magnus, soccer, football, right? He loves that. So he used to drink orange juice, right? I remember having an iconic orange juice that he used to have. And if you drink the orange juice, the problem is it's sugar in it. Yeah, sugar's not terrible, but you shouldn't have so much of it because it's going to affect you. It was going to affect your focus, and you have the crash potential because there's so much sugar in it that you can crash during a critical moment of the game. Imagine 4 hours into the game, you're getting lethargic now because of the sugar that you drank 4 hours ago, right? So it's very important to understand that I drink water all the time. I'm very strict on my diet. I actually track my macros and stuff like that. I actually got a bodybuilding coach to work with somebody to actually tell me what to do, how to do things. I've been working out since 2015 and I knew what to do. I had some, surface, self working out, like learned it myself. I learned it myself, learned it with other people at the gym. 2015 was when I started working out for real. I took a break around 2020, obviously, because everybody did, like COVID and stuff hit, gained like 60 pounds because I just didn't really do nothing. But then 2021, I was like, I can't do this again. Like, I started really ramping it up, and now I'm down so much. I'm in the best shape of my life now than I was when I first started lifting. So now I can do, I benched 315 pounds for seven reps, which my my high now. I'm like, man, I could never do that. 315 for seven is nuts. So now once I hit 315 for 10, then I'm gonna go up to 405. I train a lot, like bodybuilding shows. I had one coming up. There's one in March in Michigan, so I definitely want to do that. I've been big into bodybuilding. The job I had before I actually went full-time chess was was actually working at LA Fitness for a long time as a PTD, personal training director. I just was the director of the personal trainers, and I would train all the time. I would also sell personal training all the time to the trainers that were there, or to the I would sell the trainers to the people that were in the gym right from there. So it was really nice. But fitness helps every part of the game. I mean, my back's good, my mind, I can focus more. I can 4 or 5 hours into the game, cool, I'm not tired, I'm not lethargic. Make sure I got some water, I can still calculate because I've been working on the body. It's very important to have that connection and understand that not only is working out great, but you also need to have a strict diet. Maybe not strict, but at least take some sugar out. Make sure you know how much protein you're taking in per day, how much water are you taking, stuff like that. So it's very important, especially when you're going to tournaments, so you can be at the optimal performance.
Yeah, and so you mentioned diet a couple times. Do you adjust your diet for tournaments in particular, or are you just always trying to sort of?
I just always eat the same thing. I eat chicken, rice, broccoli, steak, chicken. Well, really, my meats are chicken and steak. Chicken, steak, and beef. But that's it. I'll eat tons of vegetables. I also take multivitamins. I take a daily vitamin. I take a zinc. I also take a vitamin D3. What else do I take? I take a daily defense. I always said a multivitamin there. Fish oil as well. I think that might be it. But I take these things. It's very important, right, to have this. And even with the COVID times, they said that people that have COVID have lower levels of zinc. I never knew this. I never caught COVID either. But I also was like, wow, that's crazy. I've been taking zinc for so long. So COVID actually wouldn't even affect me the way that it would somebody else that has the low zinc levels. Anyway, I also take vitamin C as well. 2 capsules, very important. So, you know, the diet there is just as important as the working out.
Okay. Great advice there. And someone posted about this on Twitter recently and it jogged my memory. I'm generally a good sleeper, but I sometimes have trouble sleeping during tournaments. Does that happen to you at all?
Yeah, I've actually had that sometimes. Not anymore. Because I mean, a lot of times you're like anxious and nervous, but excited all at the same time. I think they say nervous and excited is like the same emotion. So it's like really, you know, having that type of thing. Yeah, I've had that before. Like I woke up at 6 a.m. and right. wanted to study. And I was like, all right, let me just study for like 3 hours, the rounds at 10. And I'm like, dang, bro. And then by the time you get to the round, I'm like tired. I'm like, dang, right. because I studied for 3-4 hours. You should have been asleep, or you should have got up at 8 and studied for an hour and then chill for the other hour so you can play the round there. So I have had it. It is more of an experience, and you do need to, like, you know, you got to pep talk yourself or find a way to get back to sleep. Sleep is very important. In fact, I just read something this morning about how LeBron stays elite at 38 right now. And he was like, how are you staying elite? And he was like, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you can get up and you can just go for it. You know, you can do this, you can do that. You got energy, you got this. You're like, I can just go out there and wing it kind of thing. But when 38, he was like, it's all mental and it's psychology. And I asked myself, how can I get the most sleep and how can I feed my body the right way? 38 years old, talking about health and fitness, right? And that's why he's at the top of his game, right? And I do the same thing. I work out literally I forgot to say that. I know he asked how many days a week working out. I do like at least four to five every week. Every week. Sometimes I used to do more than I used to hit the gym every day, but I'm like, okay, cool. Now that I'm hitting it so much, I'm into a routine. I usually do 4 to 5 days a week, but I hit the gym very hard and I make it a priority. It's like it's a huge priority. If I got to go at 6 a.m. or I got to go at, you know, midnight, I'm going to make it to the gym, because if I do not make it there, that's a day off. I mean, it's cool to have some days off and rest, but also one day turns into 3 turns into 5. And then you're like 2 weeks later, your chest is getting worse and I've gained weight. Like, what am I doing? Right. Because I just chose to do this. Right. So it really is just as important as anything else. I mean, it's most important, like food, water, working out, chess, right? Life, you know, that's very important.
And how long are you at the gym?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I do a heavy lift. So two hours, especially wow. on like chess day, stuff like that. It's very tough because I do 3, 4, 5 exercises easily. I do 4 sets all the time. So and you have to rest in between. I don't believe in, like, you know, very, very short. If you're lifting heavy, like, for instance, I start on chest day, it'd be 1:30. Also, by the way, you know, for everybody listening, make sure you're doing leg day, boys. Always do leg day. Do not skip leg day. OK, so on chest day, I'm doing 135 for 30. So I do 30 reps to warm up 135 pounds. Then I do 225 for 10. And then I do 275 for 12. Sorry, 225 for 12, 275 for 8, and then 315 for now 7. Which is my new high. This is chest day every week. On leg day, I start with inner and outer abductors to work the hips and the legs. You know, it's very important, especially as you get older too, as well. You lose some stability if you don't work on that. So hip, a lot of stability is in the hips actually. So working those before I'm doing squats, I do squats right after that. Heavy squats, start with 135, do 15 reps, then I'll go up to 225. I do 10, then I do 275 for 8, and then I do 315 for 6 to 7. Once again, just like on the chest, but I do it for my legs for school leg day. Then I do leg extensions. Sorry, that's a leg press up to about 800 pounds, sometimes 1,000. I mean, it's just I don't really load it up like that. I don't need to do that kind of weight all the time, but I will do 6, 7, 800 pounds on the leg press for my fourth set, and then I just go into leg extensions after that. So I'm like hitting a lot of stuff. Like I train like a bodybuilder, and it's funny because like I have the bodybuilding book ABCs or the Bible of Bodybuilding by Arnold Schwarzenegger, and like if I'm at the gym, then I meet chess friends or people, friends at the gym, and they're like, "Hey, what do you do?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm a pro chess player, content creator." And like they double take, right? Like, right. You know, there must be some very heavy pieces, right? To say the least, because like how are you lifting all this weight just to go play some chess, right? But it's the mind, body, and connection.
Good stuff. And do you, if you have a 2-a-day chess tournament, do you work out on those
Absolutely.
Days ever?
I work out in the morning. Yeah, I have to. Or I work out the night before, and I'll take a day off in between somewhere in there because it is strenuous. Like, you are actually losing, burning calories while you're in there. But I also make sure my diet is top-notch while I'm there, too, as well. I actually eat less while I'm at tournaments, so I find that, like, I feel good because, like, I'm eating light that whole day anyway. I got 4 or 5 hours. I'm going to be in one game. Then I got a little bit of time to eat and study, then do it again. So I'm really not eating as much anyway that day. So it's pretty cool. So I make sure I get a good workout. Protein shakes are a very big way if you're trying to cut down calories. I recommend 2 protein shakes a day with milk. I mean, any kind of milk. I like almond, but definitely having some protein shakes with milk will cut down on a lot of hunger. Also having bars, protein bars, granola bars, stuff like that. Those are good to bring to the board. So you have some thinking food and lots of water all day.
All right. Good stuff. Well, James, I just have like 1 or 2 more questions if you're good for it.
Cool.
All right. So number one, I read that you are a rapper.
I used to do a lot of rap. We grew up like that. Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to stay away from it being from Detroit, but it was fun. I like music. My beats now, all on stream, are like just beats where you could just kind of rap on. I never do because like we gonna bring some stuff out. I have some songs. Actually, I got a song coming out with Young Elo. 2 of them actually. I have my own song too, some chess stuff. I know Levy has a song out, so we're trying to collab with that.
Oh, that'd be
trying
fun.
To get something. Yeah, me and Levy on the track. So it's fun, bro. It's very, very fun. It's just fun. It's creative. I think as a chess player, you can see words a lot of times. So I actually have a rap that I did on chess.com, I think, something like that, from this girl was rapping in CGC. She was just rapping, just outside rapping. We was like, oh, wow. So Danny walked up to her and he said, yo, Canty, you going to rap? I was like, all right, I guess I'm rapping it today. So and then we was just freestyling. It was like on YouTube. It was funny. It was a very funny freestyle, but it is on YouTube. You can catch that on the chess.com channel. But yeah, I did a lot of that growing up. So it's fun. Now I'm just nice. now I'm a chess player is what I say. I'm a chess player, but I can rap is what I say.
And you... Speaking of growing up, you got lessons from Gingy, from the American
I
legend.
I did. What was that like? Gingy Hasfili. So honestly, Roman is one of the greatest coaches, but also at the time I wasn't ready. I know, because now the stuff he's telling me, he taught me about a knight d5 piece sack in the Paulson Sicilian that I was like, how is this even possible? You sacked the whole piece. I was already 2200 over the board and didn't understand this piece sack, but now I do. I understand it on a deeper level because I do it all the time. I'm like, oh, knight d5, piece sack. I see it all the time in knight doors when you sack a piece on f5 or d5. And I'm like, wow, like he was way ahead of his time. Like really still is. He has so much knowledge. And even the books, Chess Openings for White and Black Explained, still hold up today. The analysis from the books, now, or obviously this was 2015, so that's not really that long ago when these books dropped. In fact, sorry, I got them in 2015. There's 2 versions of it. There's the Chess Openings for White and Black Explained. If you listen to, you know, get the second edition revised and updated. That is the new ones. Those came out in like 2009. But I got the book in 2015, but it came out in 2009. The one before that was 2006, if you're looking like the quality, like when did the book come out and the copyright or whatever, all that stuff, or the table contents, wherever. Somewhere in there will tell you that when it came out. But that stuff is old, but it still holds up today. That Roman was a very good coach. He told me, really, the problem is that I have with coaching that, you know, you have to really find the right coach for that. Is that, you know, I charge a lot for lessons, but I also know what I want, what I would want. So I give it to my students. So I give notes and homework every lesson. I type them up. Like I literally like, oh, and you should know this and the type of stuff. Oh, and this so that you have it for later, because some stuff he gave me files, but some of the words that he said about the files, I don't remember. Or like, yeah. This was years ago. Right. So, but if I have files, like even my coach that I worked with for the last year, the best coach hands down I've ever worked with. Now, of course, I can't reveal his name, but it is a coach that I've worked with. It was a psychology, mental, positional Russian coach. Like his psychology, his mentality was right.
he was taught me about, you know, no, don't work on the results, work on the work. I'm like, that's deep. Ain't nobody ever told me that before. And I'm like, well, I'm going to run with that. So, I mean, he's really, really, really good with that. But he didn't give me any notes or no homework, maybe a little bit of homework. I'm like, go do this. But like, I had to do that on my own. Right. And that's crazy that even a strong grandmaster coach doesn't give you more than just like, I'm talking to you. And it's that. Why is it important? Because you need to understand that you forget. And the statistic says that you forget like 90% of something you learned within the first hour. I'm like, that's nuts. I didn't even know that. So this is when I started typing notes for my students, because I want you to gain something from this and you can actually go back and look at it later. And I did the same thing with my coach. I can go back and look at the first lesson we took December 2021. I can go in there and I'm like, oh, this is what he said. Oh, the Russian own system that me and him created, like it's OOWN, which stands for observation, opponents, immediate threats, what's available, no excitement. And the end, that's very important, because when you calculate, and you have to have no emotion. He taught me that. You have to have no emotion, because if you have emotions, that's going to make you make very bad decisions. And of course, a lot of times making emotional-based decisions outside of chess is actually not even a good thing, right? So in chess, you have emotion, you're trying to make a decision, you're trying to calculate, that's not going to be good. So I learned a lot, you know, from that as well. But it's very powerful, bro. There's so many things, you know, out here with chess, man, that I can put y'all on. Y'all got to send it to my PayPal.
Great stuff. All right, two more. Number one, you got to go to Toronto for the chess.com global championship. Got obviously Hess was there, Nareditsky, Danny Rensch. Yep. I mean, yep. It must have everybody. Been quite memorable. So what's your fondest memory from that experience?
Actually hanging out with Fabiano, Geary, and Nareditsky Levy, just asking, really, I think one of my favorite parts was asking the Super GMs really like their favorite openings. Because I'm like, you know, I'm looking around. I just want to know what they like. Now, of course, Wesley said the most solid stuff. He's like, oh, Queen's Gambit decline. I'm like, bro, what the? Man, that's so boring, bro. What are you talking? But, of course, he likes those type of positions. If you look at his chessable course,
yeah.
He's a classical player. His chessable course with white is like an encyclopedia. It really is ridiculous. In his stuff, it's very, very dense, very dense. And I went through it many times and still be like, bro, this is just a computer course. That's what it really is. It's like a computer course for E4, but it's really nice if you want that kind of solidity in a game like that. Geary said Nidorf. I'm like, bet. I love the Nidorf. I just drew, you know, Alex Fishbane, Grandmaster, with the Nidorf from the black side. Slightly better, but ended up drawing that game in my last tournament. So Nidorf, I'm like, cool, I like that. I asked Fabi personally. I'm like, yo, bro, black is tough against D4. What you playing these days? And I asked him a few openings. He's like, yeah, you know, I tried Simi. He was like, yeah, Rogozin's good. Simi's good. Simi Slav, that is. And I'm like, oh, cool. And so I asked him, because I'm like, yo, I've been looking at some Simi Slav. What you think? He was like, yeah, I use this some. So it's good to, like, I'm just chatting with them, having fun, right? I can text, you know, some of them right now. And I mean, and what's the name? Fabiano is in my DMs. Like, I can talk to him on Instagram, you know, like, right. Real easy. Amazing. It's amazing, right? He follows me. He watches my stories and stuff. Or, like, anytime he has a tournament, I'm like, yo, bro, good luck. He like, yo, thanks, bro. Like, it's really cool to hang out with these guys. So, but I learned a lot. And I'm like, okay, cool. So now I just need to, you know, keep working. I also have Fabi again as my screensaver about the universal style, how most players are universal these days that you see. And I started seeing that because I remember studying myself and looking at players and started realizing people's repertoires get more versatile. And I'm like, you know, I'm looking at players that I really like, Ferrugia, you know, Richard Rapport. I mean, people that are creative players and very strong and tactical. And Hans, like, I looked at so many players, Nakamura, everybody. And I'm like, especially chessgames.com is a good one. Chess games, like type in chess games and a name. And then the old site, chessgames.com, comes up and it tells you all their stuff, which is really cool. I like that one. That's a very old site that is very used still today. I use it like almost every day. But it tells you, and I'm starting to look, and I remember having this in my mind, like, these guys play everything, or like they've played it before. Because even Magnus says that you need to play different openings to become a better player. That doesn't mean that you stick to that opening, but it's good to look at it and so you can learn how to be a better player. It's very important that you look at this stuff. So I started seeing this and I'm like, wow, being universal is very important. So being with Fabi, asking him questions, and then having the screensaver here about the universal, like, you know, I really learned a lot there. That was a big, fun trip. Paid nice. The food was good. Toronto was good. Hanging out with the family there. And having a blast asking the super GMs questions about stuff, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, sounds amazing. Sounds like you won't forget it anytime soon.
I'll never forget that, right.
All right, last one, James. You mentioned at the beginning when you were talking about your quest for the IM and the GM title that you look to be an inspiration for the African-American community in particular. When you come across, like, young, hungry African-American players who are enthusiastic about chess, is there any sort of special advice you give them, or is it like the same advice you would give to any young hungry chess player?
Yeah, I would give it to any young or old chess players. Never pay attention to the people that doubt you or hate, or you know, you have to put your head down. Like, I think the best way to put it is, there's a quote where, like, hey, when you're running a race, you never look to the side of you to try to see what they're doing, because you're not looking at the path in front of you. So if you only look at the path in front of you and just run, by the time you get to the finish line, you look back and you notice that nobody was there. Oh, snap. I was scared the whole time of nothing, right? There's a thing called dogma, living in the opinions of other people. So if you tell me, oh, you're never going to hit you. Oh, you're not even. It was funny. I am not a GMSB chess championship. I made it to the finals, right? Only losing to Eric Rosen by 3 games. 2 of them were mouse slips, all documented. So, right, you see it on YouTube. I lost 2 games literally because of mouse slips. Like, it was just like, we was like, somehow he has some type of view. Voodoo where he makes you bounce slip, and of course he has the stalemate trick, so Earl Rosen is just a character, we love him, right? But you know, I had 2 games off mouse slips, and one he really beat me, so that was like the closest match. It really was like a 1-game match, but I beat 3 IMs to get there. I remember looking in the comments where, like, you know, they was like, oh, his FIDE rating is only 21 something, how, I mean, he's gonna get crushed in this account. And then I beat the first match. I was winning the first 5 games I won in a row against an IM. And now it's like, oh, where'd that 2100 FIDE come from, right? Where did that go, right? Because if I listen to that comment, that's going to make me step back, you know, and stuff like that. And I made it through Shuvalova as well, 2500 FIDE. The next round, when people was like, oh, he has no chance, she's 2500 FIDE. And I won by 3 after a 3-hour match, right? So it is definitely, you don't listen to nobody. You listen to yourself and the people that you look up to, unless it's negativity they're giving you. If it's negative, you get it out your life, bro. And you have to keep moving and keep pushing and keep working, discipline. You have to be hungry for it and just, you know, focus on you. Set a goal and do it. Don't let anybody mess you up from that goal.
All right. Excellent note to end on, James. Always inspiring. You got me fired up. I might even go study some chess.
Let's go, bro. Let's get it. Let's get it.
All right.
Dog.
Well, thanks again, man. Good luck in Charlotte. This will be out right after it's over, so we can check how you did. But it sounds like a good time down there with the aforementioned Eric Rosen. And yeah, James, glad we could finally make this happen.
Hey, man, me too, man. Thanks for having me, of course. And, you know, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah,
thanks,
all right.
Guys.
And we got to plug everything. So calculation over everything. I told you I'm about to order a T-shirt. That's his merch.
Let's go.
Twitch. Where else?
Twitch.tv/GMCanty. YouTube is James Canty III. You can also type in GM Canty, James Canty Chess. That's it. YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, GM Canty. I actually get paid for my Instagram reels now. So you actually, if you guys go watch my videos, that'd be great. Just go watch the reels. I have TikTok now too, but on TikTok and Instagram, I post a lot of workout videos. So if people are quite curious about working out, or, like, you know, how stuff looks, or maybe even form or stuff like that. Also just chess clips from the stream and just chess stuff. People also that buy merch, I post them too in like a highlight reel on Instagram. Instagram's GM Canty, Twitch.tv/GMCanty, and then my merch site is shopcantymerch.com.
Okay, I'm an Instagram potzer, but I'm gonna make sure I follow you at minimum. All right, James, thanks again, and hope we cross paths at a tournament sometime soon, and good luck in Charlotte.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, BennyFishel1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the...
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.